Hello.
This is Paul Felix.
Hi, Paul.
I'm one of our amazing production designers here. Most recently, we were production designer on Inner Workings, which came out with Moana last year. I'm part of that production design on the Big Hero 6. And before we get into Q&A with Paul about his work on the Bambi Dizzy Graph, we have a little short piece to show.
Hi everyone, my name is Paul Felix. I'm a visual development artist and production designer here at Disney Animation. The very first time I saw Bambi, the effect was very profound because I'd never seen a film that was just such a model of simplicity in the way it was conceived.
It isn't every day a prince is born.
It's such an amazing piece of filmmaking created by artists who were creating the art of animation while they were making these amazing films. And the fact that it still stands as one of the best animated films of all time, and Walt Disney's personal favorite, means a lot to me that I was able to contribute in some small way to remembering the film and honoring some of my favorite artists who worked on it.
Kind of wobbly, aren't you?
Tara Swan is one of the most revered figures here at Disney Animation. What inspired me to create this piece of artwork for Disney Graph was just to combine that poetic feeling that I felt in Tyrus's work with some of the really expressive animation poses that Mark Davis had done. Davis used pencils and colored pencils, so it's a little bit of a combination of both. I'm flattered to have been asked to create this Disney Graph of Bambi because it is such a really deeply held film for me, and I just wanted to share it with you, and I hope you like it.
I guess the idea is just to keep it pretty informal. If you guys have any questions about either making a piece or largely about the making of the film, I'd be happy to try to answer anything. Yeah.
Is that the illustration?
Yeah, that's the,
from
that's
the video.
The one.
That's the original.
I did that in my office. took,
how long did it take, Paul?
An hour.
An hour.
Ah, skills. Yeah.
Well, when you had a camera trained on you with like people watching you, it speeds things along a little bit. But it was great. It was fun. I did one practice run the night before to see if I could, how long, because I didn't know how long it was going to take to do it. And that one, Bambi, looks so much like a fox. Even this one has like, I could change the model a little bit.
A little Nick Wilde-esque. A little Nick Wilde-esque.
Yeah, it's probably sneaking in there. But it was a blast.
How old were you when you first saw Bambi?
24. I looked out and I wasn't traumatized.
When you're sort of coming into your own as an artist. So
right. Well, actually, it was I had bought a high-tech laser disc player right at that time. That was like one of the first three discs that I bought was Bambi, and that was the first time I'd ever seen it.
Can you talk about the sort of effect that it had on you and the revelations you saw in it?
Yeah, it was actually huge. I mean, I can't overstate like how much of an effect watching this film had on me, because I had just started at Disney, and like a lot of young artists, I knew how to render things. This film was really taught me that the art of it is making relationships between things, and thinking about light and atmosphere, what to leave in, what to leave out. You know, it's just a masterclass. It also had just the most amazing use of color in it, but I couldn't even think about that for like 10 more years, because there was so much to be learned in just what they were able to do on this film. And you know, the one thing I'd like to impress is like how much this film means to the studio. It's really like deeply revered film, like a real touchstone for us, because what it's able to do thematically, you know, it expanded what you could do in a Disney film. But just to see like how far animated films have come from the black and white Mickey Mouse films that they were making just, you know, 5 years before this, it's amazing.
To elaborate on that. For you as an animator, what do you see of the process now, from a hand sketch to now digital drawings? What has that been like?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, in a sense, everything is still created the same way. We still do 2D drawings, mostly on computer because they're easier to, you know, transfer around the studio. But we find ourselves constantly trying to get the look and feel of what, you know, they were doing with natural art materials. You know, we'll look into different brushes in Photoshop to try to get something more analog feeling. If you ask any of the artists here, they'll say, like, okay, deep down, nothing feels like having a pencil in your hand. You don't have the control on a Wacom, on a Cintiq, or a, you know, on a Wacom tablet. But the advantages outweigh what you're missing, and you learn to adapt too. So you know, I think there's that to it. But you know, when you get a chance to do something by hand, you know, it's like a kid with crayons all over again.
Paul, for the general eye, when you see a film 20 years ago and now, probably for the general eye, it's going to be very similar. But as an artist, what are the differences we're going to see in this new rendition of Bambi?
As opposed to the earlier home video?
Yeah, as opposed to, I mean, 20 years ago.
I know the film was restored about a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they took care of some of the, you know, there's some mistakes that happened in filmmaking that they were able to correct.
Like what?
There's a shot at the end of the fire when a mother possum is licking her young possums dry. And in the original version, for some whatever reason, those young possums disappear halfway through the scene. So she's just looking in the air for a while. And I would have never seen that. And I noticed that they fixed that one this last time. But there's also, they also have, because Disney has its own research library where they're able to have the original backgrounds and the cells for the characters. So they were able to, like, they knew what film stocks they were using back then. So they can sort of, and they had the notes from the production, so they can finesse the color to what they imagine it must have looked like on the release. You know, a lot of it is subjective still. You know, colors may not look exactly as they did in the theater. But you're able to, because we have that, the amazing archive here, we're able to come close to what we imagine the vision of the filmmakers must have been.
So originally it was in color too? 75 years ago it was in color?
Yeah. Disney was first started using color films back in 1933 with the short films. And of course Snow White was in color as the first animated
film.
This film was supposed to be the second film after Snow White, but because of the care they needed to make this particular film, and the fact that things happened outside of the studio's control, it ended up coming out 5 years after Snow White.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that this is one of the films that modern day Disney animators turn to a lot. What to get inspiration for things that they're working on. Have you had that experience, or do you have any anecdotes?
Yeah, well, I work in the art department, so we're more, you know, involved in designing the settings and the characters, and for that purpose, Bambi never goes away. I mean, I was talking to an artist just the other day to see, because I was trying to get their any insights about what they think about Tyrus Wong, the guy who designed a lot of the look of Bambi, and, you know, how relevant is it to the artist now? And she said, it just came up in a meeting today. The director just said, like, can you make this look a little bit more like, you know, it look a little bit more like Bambi kind of feeling in this scene. So we're constantly taking a look at it to the point where, like, I know we all know almost every single one of those sketches that Tyrus has done. And we all know which specific sequences are in the film. And it really is just like very near.
You were saying that you were kind of joking about the movie leaving a trauma on you or in you. Can you talk about that the kind of the archetype of the parent dying in an animated film that I think it was maybe the first one?
Yeah, it was. Disney had never explored a theme like that before. I mean, you know, it's in the original source novel too. But the decision was made that you're creating a sense of what life is like for these animals in the forest, and loss is part of it. So, to be honest about the vision that you had for the film, you couldn't leave that out, and it's just a question of, like, you know, how is it done? How do you prepare an audience for something like that? I think that film is sort of like a way for you to sort of like abstractly explore problems and questions you may not have considered. So I imagine for children to have something like Bambi, an experience like Bambi, means they could sort of explore what would happen if this happened, you know, because that mother-child connection is so strong. It's a way to sort of like safely imagine what it might be like without, you know, and for some kids it's really tough, but it's a way for them to think outside themselves and imagine what that could be.
A few years ago.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you fast forward to Simba losing Mufasa,
yeah,
and Arlo with his dad as well. It seems like a theme. Would you say that Bambi's what set that up?
Yeah. And I remember when The Lion King came out, the reviewer for Time Magazine said, like, well, alas, like, the primal Disney that was on display in Bambi is back. You know, it's just like that you're able to go to this range of filmmaking. You know, it's something, because, you know, we're filmmakers here as much as any other studio, that the expanded vocabulary of what a story could be is, like, that's great for us. You know, you can see, like, even in Big Hero 6,
yeah,
a major character dies.
Yeah.
And because of Bambi, that, you know, we knew what issues come up around loss, and we could, you know, sense what an audience reaction might be, but, you know, at least we have that in our filmmaking toolkit.
Yeah. They say that Game of Thrones is bad. You guys are pretty bad
yourself. I know. It's a really, I mean, it's you know, a lot of it is taste too, but it's, yeah.
I'm going off of that. A few years ago, Time Magazine named Bambi one of the 25 greatest horror movies of all time. it's true. I mean, they ranked it with, you know, like Dracula, Frankenstein, Halloween, things like that. Because it is like the horror movie when you're a child. It is. And I rewatched it last night. I mean, still, like, do you think that's fair?
I mean, it's kind of cool to think about, actually, that you're on the same list as
Drax. To me, it makes sense, because sometimes, you know, horror gets, like, a bad rap. It's not calling it, like, a slasher or anything. It's just, like, it's a horrifying movie. It's a beautiful, wonderful movie, but it's also, you know, it's very affecting.
It does have that thing in common where you're turning against expectations. Like, you know, you think you're watching just a young fawn growing up, and
yeah,
then that happens. But having watched it again, like, a couple nights ago, it kind of it's sort of telegraphed a little bit when they're in the meadow earlier,
mm-hmm,
when the danger of man is explained.
Yeah.
It could have been worse, because it could have been a lot worse, because there was a long part of during the production, Disney wanted an image of man's dead hand ending the fire sequence. Like,
oh, well,
like, man created the fire and is destroyed by it. So you would see, you know, I don't know if it was charred or what, but
oh,
so it could have been worse.
It's poetic.
Yeah.
It's very poetic.
Going back to Tyrus, is there a moment in Bambi you think that best exemplifies his artistry or his influence on Disney?
There's two sequences that come to mind are the meadow sequences with the deer bounding over the logs, because they got really expressionistic with the color of the deer there. They're like, you know, kind of pastel colors as they're jumping over the logs. And also the I Bring You a Song, Love Song sequence when Bambi and Fawn are falling in love. And that's done exclusively through the action of nature, because they're not falling all over each other. It's not really, not expressly emotive themselves, but it's what happens around them that lets you know how they feel. And Tyrus explored all those moods in his paintings, and he's the one who set the template for the film's visual vocabulary.
This is another creepy question. In regards to those characters who are not common in the history of movies, I read about a list of gay characters who are in movies, in movies like Bambi or other animated movies. And one of them was, Tumber? Okay, that he resembles a gay character. Is there something that has been talking?
I don't think that was on anyone's thinking back then. I mean, Bambi is a product of the 1930s, like any other film, so I don't think that was really, you know, something that filmmakers were even exploring.
Yeah, but it was also mentioned, like, Winnie the Pooh, Tambor, also many characters in animated movies or animated characters that were mentioned in that list, so.
Yeah, everything gets reevaluated according to the time that you're in. All we have to go back is, like, what was going on when Bambi was being made, or Winnie the Pooh, or any of the other films. It has its specific cultural context. That context changes with the time, so we can go back and take a look at the film. And sometimes we either read things that are in the film, or, you know, we there are things in the film that don't feel correct to us anymore. You know, it just depends on where you're with and how you're looking at a film.
And plus, people are always looking for stuff.
That's true, especially digital. Wow.
Intimidating or nerve-wracking is it to create a companion piece for something that's been around 75 years versus introducing audiences to new characters they've never seen before?
You mean with regards to this piece?
Or? Yeah, I mean, just for yourself, when you're, you know, creating something like that, you have to sort of get out of your own head.
It's flattering. I mean, because the people who created this film are giants to us, and it's just like it's nice to pay them an homage that way. But to, you know, it's separated that way. It's sort of like, you know, it's like the fanboy thing. Or that, you know, I'm really honored. I got to meet a couple of the artists, Mark Davis and Tyrus Wong, who worked on the project. And just having that personal connection means a lot to me. So to do something like this, sort of, you know, as a tribute to them is great.
What was the sort of immediate effect of Bambi on the studio when it was released? Because, I mean, this was like the last big theatrical before the war.
Yeah.
So what was kind of, you know, with the success of it, but also kind of being stuck having to do the government work.
Yeah.
What came out of Bambi for Walt Disney Studios?
It was, I don't believe it made back its money on its first release. I mean, so many things went on at the same time. The war was happening, so there were no foreign markets. Disney was just coming out of a strike, so the workforce of the studio had changed at that point. So it was a difficult time. I mean, Disney wasn't able to make another full-length animated film until Cinderella, which was 8 years after this one. It had to be really frustrating. The money wasn't there. The staff had moved on, drafted, and most of the studio was making, you know, wartime. So it's I think everyone's really proud of what was accomplished on Bambi. I think it's that thing where, like, you don't really know you're in a golden age until you're not in it anymore. That's why I can't think of any account of what people thought about it at the time.
Going off of that, like, Walt Disney now, you know, we see him like one of the great visionaries of the 20th century, and you know, he took such big risks. Like, he famously he mortgaged his house to finance Snow White.
And yeah, his car.
Yeah, yeah.
And he
put everything on the line for that movie, and he took all these risks. And do you see that same kind of spirit alive and well here at Disney right now?
What, mortgaging our houses?
Not necessarily. given that's extreme, but you see that kind of like...
That kind of risk-taking as far as...
Yes.
Yeah, if you talk to any of the directors here, I mean, they look at what's been done. None of them are comfortable being just repeating ourselves, because the last thing you want to do is to, like, spend 3 or 4 years on a project doing something that you know you've seen before. Mm-hmm. So there's that constant edge desire to be more on the cutting edge of film and filmmaking. I mean, if you look back over the body of animated films in the last 20 years or so, there are certain trends, there are certain things that you see over and over again. Those are the things that they're like, we can do more than that. You know, technologically, we were able to do a lot more. Big Hero 6 gave us like a very realistic lighting system for the first time, so we can really think about things like cinematography in ways that we were able to do. So the tools have gotten better, and we would just be bored if we ever had to repeat ourselves that way. And if you like, you know, look at things like sequels that may or may not be mimic American Ralph, it's like, it has to be equal to the original. It has to capture the filmmaker's interest as much as the first one did. Otherwise, it's a lot of time to spend on something that's not.
We probably have time for one last question.
Paul, while doing your research, did you find something new or something, a revelation probably, that probably you didn't know about the studios or Bambi or what the
research about Bambi?
Yes.
So, I guess the biggest thing for me was that they made it against all odds. Like all the things I've mentioned, like the strike in the World War II and the studio moving from Silver Lake over here. It's amazing that they were able to make something that sophisticated and that grew the studio that much in a short amount of time. It's like 5 years. And make something that's so profound in a way. It's like, it's not Snow White at all. It's like, it's the themes are much simpler and more elemental. It's the range of what Disney was doing in all his early films, from Snow White to Pinocchio with Fantasia. It's a giant range, and realize that all happened within the space of like less than 10 years. That's the amazing thing that I found out.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.